In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Episode 159, Brian Shackman, John Senecal here with you as we kick off the second half of the Major League Baseball season. I think it sort of bears a little bit of a look back into the All-Star game. I only have one thing to talk about, but John, how's it going? What's on your mind? Did you watch the whole game? I did not.
Yeah, so I didn't stay up for the whole game. I'm getting up there in years, Brian. So I do check out sometimes around 10 o'clock. No, I didn't stay up and watch the whole game, but I did watch till the. I did see Jaron Duran hit a home run, so I stayed up till about the seventh inning, and then I cashed out. But I did. I took part of the whole festivities. You know, the home run derby, the awful national anthem, and then Teoscar Hernandez winning. Like I said, Brian.
You should have bet on it, though.
I'm not a betting man, though, because you know what happens.
You could have put $2 on it, an old guy bet.
I know, but I don't think the DraftKings let you do just $2, do they? I don't know.
Well, FanDuel does. You can bet $1 on.
It's one of those things where you look back and you're watching it, and then you look back the next day, like, man, if I put $1,000 on him, that would be a nice chunk towards the college tuition right now.
For full disclosure, Matt Sarois, who produces the podcast and my our morning show on WTIC. And John and I have a text thread, and basically Matt, who follows a lot of the wagering, you know, put out the you said Teoscar, and the odds were put out, and we're like, you should put some money on it, and you're like, whatever, and then you didn't, and then I guess he started off poorly, but then he ended up winning it.
Yeah, the new format, he was able to stick around, and he stayed in the top four, and then worked his way, and then beat Alec Boehm on the end. So it was an interesting home run. Actually, it wasn't Alec Boehm; it was Bobby Witt Jr. He beat at the end, and Bobby Witt almost hit the tying home run to send it into extra overtime or whatever you want to call it. But in the end, Teoscar is the winner.
Yeah, I want to talk about Jaron Duran, but I would just say that the home run derby. I understand why the Stars don't do it, because they don't want to risk injury, but it doesn't work for me unless the best hitters are doing it. So I have very mixed emotions on it.
I don't know if there's ever going to be an exact format either. You know, I feel like they keep tweaking it, and, you know, this time they got 40 pitches, but a lot of guys ran out of time, and they had 5 or 6, 7 pitches left, some of the guys did, in that 40 seconds, and then I'm not so sure in this day and age that a 425-foot home run warrants extra swings, you know? I mean, these guys are supposed to be, you know, home run derby guys. They should be hitting them, I would say, something maybe 450 or more, you know, and then keep it down low. But, you know, they like to see the numbers go up, and the fans probably like to see that too. But
They juice the ball and all this other crap.
But let me ask you this. So I feel like you got to say something about it. When you watch the National Anthem live, given what we know now about the singer, what was your initial reaction live, not given what we know now, just as it happened?
It was terrible. Yeah. And it wasn't like Roseanne Barr terrible, because for her, it was almost like indignant. You know,
like she tried to be bad.
Or just like, you know, she kind of knew it was bad. And
yeah.
And then the crowd reaction didn't go well. This one I couldn't figure out. And you know, I'll just reflect a few comments I made during my morning show is that, you know, obviously, if she's got a problem, you want her to get better. But we know celebrities. Sometimes celebrities screw up and they do the rehab thing for cover.
Right.
So, you know, she probably was drunk. But if she was drunk, partying drunk, or if she was drunk because she was nervous and like thought it might calm her.
Right.
Then like my level of empathy changes. Right. You know, because if she's got a real drinking problem, then obviously there's empathy there. If she was a partier and screwed up and she's trying to save her career, so quote unquote goes into rehab, I don't have a lot of empathy. If she was nervous and felt like it would help, then I have some empathy. If she was partying and didn't really respect it, then I have very little empathy. Like, if I don't know the truth, I don't know the truth. But like my reaction and my feelings will be very different based on what the truth is.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. But watching it, you know, she didn't start out that bad. And then it kind of just progressively got worse and worse and worse. But the one thing that was interesting is she didn't mess up the words. she got all the words right. And it was just a train wreck of just off key and sounded like cats scratching the door and dogs barking.
Maybe she can't sing. Maybe she can't sing.
Well, I mean, I have a hard time. I'm going to say this and someone will say Milli Vanilli, right? But I have a hard time believing that a four-time Grammy-nominated artist can't sing, right? And I'll go back to your point about, you know, what levels of her issue is. I don't think someone that just has a couple drinks to take off the edge is going to go out there and perform the national anthem. I legit think she has an issue. She has a problem that you know, she got out there, she got in over her head. And I mean, looking back, I feel bad for her. I mean, she struggled. She made it through it. But, you know, hopefully... I would honestly like to see Major League Baseball bring her back next year as a redemption and let her sing it again and see how it works out for her if she gets the help
Mark,
she needs.
Put this day on your calendar. It is the day that John Senecal's more optimistic about people than me.
I completely understand. I mean, where she's coming from, right? Granted, I wasn't in front of 45,000 people singing, but I have been messed up and drunk, and I've been open about, you know, not drinking anymore and my struggles with alcohol. But she clearly has a problem. I don't think anyone in their right mind is going to put themselves in that situation if there wasn't underlying circumstances. Because let's be honest, the national anthem is scrutinized at every single level, from a little league field to the big stage. So that's one thing you have to be on your A game to do.
All right. Well, listen, the one thing I want to talk about, and it sort of involves you tangentially before we get on to the draft and then the second half of the season, is Jarren Duran. I think I've talked about this. Maybe I've told the story, but, you know, I go back to when Dustin Pedroia broke through and I was working at NBC Connecticut, and director Jason Henry was a big Red Sox fan, and Pedroia was terrible when he first got called up. And I feel like I'm a pretty good judge and whatever, and I just was like, this guy he's undersized, he's clearly overmatched, this guy is never gonna make it, like, never. And
he made it.
Jason Henry what's that?
And he made it.
Well, Jason Henry was like, he's a baseball coach too, he's like, no, he's gonna be fine, he's gonna be fine. And I was like, every time he went up and struck out three times in a game, I was like, this guy stinks. And it turns out he was great. When Duran came up in parts of two seasons, I think I looked at it, in two seasons he played about 90 games, had a couple hundred at-bats, was batting less than .220. And I was like, this guy, he looks kind of lackadaisical. He's more interested in his biceps than he is in the game. And he's found a way. First of all, he's totally jacked, but whether someone has coached him well or managed him well or helped change his focus or what, the kid is so different in his approach than he was 2 years ago. And the fact that, I mean, he only got one hit in the game. He got the MVP because it happened to be the winning hit in the end. But I'm just amazed at baseball, because you can struggle and suffer. And if someone believes in you, gives you enough opportunities, you find a way to block out the things you need to block out, you can succeed. And there's plenty for every Jarren Duran and Dustin Pedroia. There's 500 people who couldn't turn around.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we talk about baseball, I talk about wrestling as failure sports that you need to suffer and fail to test you to see if you're legit and you belong. And Duran he won my respect in so many ways, because even before the other night in the All-Star game, because he was failing. And he found a way to figure it out. And to me, as for athletes or people struggling with intellectual math problems, people who do that get my utmost respect.
Yeah, I think there's a few factors here. I mean, he's 27. I think he's obviously matured. He's learned the game a little bit. I'm sure I think being in the position on the team he was in going into the season, where the expectations were much lower, I think, you know, there wasn't so much pressure on him as far as like to perform, and he kind of quietly was able to do it around guys like Devers, and I'll even say like Trevor Story, you know, not being on the team and all the focus on him, and all along he's not the one that's getting the extensions on the contract, why these other guys are, the Rafaels and the Bayos. But I think, you know, when you listen to Jarren Duran talk when he accepted the MVP award, and they asked him about his experience, and he said, you know, it's going to be hard to play against these guys in the AL East, because I just learned of what great people they are and how awesome they are as individuals, and how I just want to be friends with these guys. So, you know, these guys are going to this event And they're not just going there as athletes. They're going there as fanboys, too. They're going there as lovers of the sport, you know? And who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want to go in there and pick Aaron Judge's mind or Shohei Ohtani or meet Shohei or whoever it may be if you're a baseball fan? And I think, and if you saw Jaren Duran and his family, speaking of the tats, I think that's just the way his family's bred. They all are kind of tatted up and I was impressed with Jaren Duran. I did not expect him to sound the way he did. I've never heard him talk until last night, and he seems like he's a very shy guy, to be honest with you. I feel like he's like almost kind of like unassuming, that like he's kind of just in this position. He's like, you know what? I'm just a baseball player. You know, I just like to play the game. So, I you know me, Brian. I've been a Jaren Duran supporter for this whole season. I've been talking him up. So good for him. And, you know, he came in and replaced Judge in center field and wound up winning the MVP.
Yeah, it's incredible. It was a really good story, in my opinion. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 159 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, I don't really care much for the baseball draft has changed in the sense that if you're a top pick now, there's a chance you'll see that person in the majors a lot sooner than in the past. When we were little, it was always a couple years. You know, outside of like the Ken Griffey's of the world, it always was a couple years. They went to, you know, short season, then they went to single A, then double A, and then either up to the bigs or a little bit of time in triple A.
Well, usually, Paul Skenes, like, right? Drafted number one last year. Starts in the All-Star game.
Right. So, I mean, it's different. So
shorter rounds, too. Less rounds.
Yep. And so if you really, like, you probably, if you're a real baseball fan, you should pay more attention because they're going to get to the bigs a little bit quicker. I just, you know, there's so much going on. I didn't pay attention. The only thing I knew is that David Ortiz's kid got picked by the Red Sox. I don't know if it was token or not. I mean, he played for the Brockton Rocks in that second-tier college league in New England that made a lot of news. And then Manny Ramirez's other kid, his younger boy, got drafted as well. I didn't know anything about him, but you say he's legit.
Yeah, Manny's kid, Lucas, is right now he has a commitment to go to Tennessee, and we know if you follow baseball, Tennessee is the reigning national champions this year. So if you've got a commitment to go to Tennessee, you are a baseball player. There's no doubt, regardless of your last name. They're not going to put you on the roster just because you're Manny's kid, right? It's just not, that's not going to happen. So I would think that if he's going to go the MLB route and sign, that, you know, he might have some chances because he has the tools. But chances are, I would think he might want to go to college and experience that. But getting to D'Angelo Ortiz, David's on 19th round pick. I would say he's a Tommy Lasorda, Mike Piazza pick kind of thing. You know, way late in the game, because when you look him his name up on Google, it doesn't come up as semi-pro baseball player or baseball player. It comes up as internet personality and David Ortiz's son.
Oof.
So that just tells me that the baseball is probably, at least in this post, is a third strike on the list. So my guess would be you're not going to see D'Angelo Ortiz in the major leagues anytime soon or in the future. But I'm sure he'll sign a ton of autographs in the minor leagues and take a lot of pictures with dad. But you know what? Regardless, you know, great for him, and it's awesome that Poppy, you could tell Poppy was definitely emotional about it. He was excited about it. So regardless if it was a whatever pick, it's still a defining moment. It's still a step in your child's life, which is still cool. So it's great for them. But interesting, though, cool. You know, the Yankees, so there's 20 rounds now, and the Yankees took 13 pitchers out of those 20 rounds, and only one high school kid with their last pick. They took one high school kid with their last pick, and they took 13 out of 20 pitchers. So I think
the trend is no more high school kids are not the draw that they used to be necessarily, right?
No, I think you got to be an absolute insane stud, like a Bryce Harper or something, that you just know that these guys, especially the pitchers, right? Because their arms really haven't fully developed yet. And I think they're looking at these pitchers that have went through college, that have got the workload on them, got the more pressure, been in the bigger situations, and haven't been injured yet, maybe too. Yeah. And pitching's a huge commodity. You know, you can draft a shortstop, and you know, he might wind up being a first baseman or a center fielder or a catcher. You never know. So I think if you're going to draft 20 rounds and you get the majority of pitchers and hope that maybe a third of them pan out, I think that's what they're looking at there.
Well, let me ask you this: like Skenes, how many years did he spend at LSU?
I think he only spent two, because he was at the Air Force Academy, and then he came over as a two-way player, mainly as an offensive player, because the dude can rake. And then he pitched a little, and then in his second year, he went primarily to pitching. So I think he only played.
But he went to college for at least 3 years.
Three years, yes.
Because he's 22. And I guess the point is that maybe college isn't the for him to do that, and he's a special player, obviously, but maybe college isn't the gap between college and pro ball, especially for pitchers. Maybe the gap isn't as big as it used to be. I don't know, because, you know, that kind of stuff. I remember when Ben McDonald, you know, he was the guy who was in college, and then he got drafted like top pick, and then he didn't sign with the Orioles because he went down to the Cape for a hot second before they signed him. And I remember it was a huge deal in Orleans because the Orleans Cardinals, and like he was the one. It was just this big difference because he was like ready to go.
Yeah, right? Coming out of LSU, he was a huge deal. Yep. But look what happened to him. I mean, he's nothing special. He had a good five years of career, but I mean, there's
not great.
No, nothing special. And if you look at the number one draft picks, very seldom do they make it across the board, you know, as far as hitting and making it, you know, as an impact.
But my point is that maybe the top of college ball is better than it was 30 years ago.
Well, I think a lot of it recently has to do with COVID, because believe it or not, there's still some residuals coming from the COVID and the extra years and eligibility. And a lot of these guys are getting redshirted as freshmen at other universities, and they're keeping their eligibility, and the transfer portal kicks in as a sophomore or a junior year. And next thing you know, you got a 22-year-old senior or a 23-year-old senior who, like you said, is going to be major league ready, really. I mean, and the same thing can be said about prep school kids. I mean, there's a kid from Connecticut, his name's Aiden O'Connell, who was up high in the draft, who goes to Avon Old Farms, which is a prep school. He's going to turn 21 next month.
Nice.
Okay, and he wasn't drafted. So chances are he's probably going to go to college. And if he has 4 years of eligibility, you do the math, Brian. He's going to be 25, 26 years old coming out of college.
Yeah. So it's a different conversation. The trend of these kids in high school, they're trying to take as long as they can to get the best opportunities.
Yep.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Okay, so we get going again. It's time for baseball that matters. And I just don't know. I mean, obviously going into the break, I believe it was the horrible loss by the Yankees.
Awful.
Was that right before the break?
Yeah, that was the Sunday afternoon game with the Orioles, where they Ben Rice hits a 3-run homer to put them ahead. And next thing you know, the Volpe and Holmes crash the party, and the Yankees lose on a walk-off. But, you know, again, Clay Holmes, I'll say it again, the Yankees are not going to win him as a closer. And for him to make the All-Star team and not even pitch and take up a spot for someone, for a guy who shouldn't have been there to begin with, is wrong. It's wrong.
Right.
I'm sorry. The guy has more hits than innings pitched. He is a train wreck every time he goes out there, regardless of what the save numbers say. If you're a Yankee fan, you follow it.
He's an All-Star.
It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And I'll say it over and over again. The Yankees need to figure that out, or they will not win with him. They will not win with Clay Holmes as their closer.
So things get started. The Yankees are at home against Tampa. The Orioles are on the road against Texas, and Texas seems to be a shadow of itself from a year ago. And the Red Sox are out west against the Dodgers. So in terms of like getting out of the gate, the Yankees are in a very good position, because listen, the Orioles are still on the road, right? So the Rangers are not great, but they still have some potential, and who knows. And the Rays, who obviously play tough, they're down, and the Red Sox are playing the Dodgers. So I mean, there's a good chance that the Yankees could gain a little out of the gate if they play decent.
Yeah, I would hope. I hope the Yankees come out refreshed. I mean, people can take what they want, that they won the series going into the All-Star break, but that's still a bad loss coming out, and still a ton of holes to fill. I hope there's some fresh blood. I hope Gunnar Henderson has some residuals from the home run derby and he slumps a little bit. But, like, you know, the Yankees have Tampa, New York, Boston, and Philly. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not anything good, because Mets were the hottest team in baseball really going in. Tampa's a thorn. The Red Sox are a thorn. And, of course, Philly is the best team in baseball. So it's not going to get easy for the Yankees. And they're not going to – they need to make changes. I mean, I'll harp on that to the end. We know they need offense.
What's the deadline?
Well, the deadline, I believe, is August 1st is the trade deadline. But again, you got 2 weeks to figure it out, and it's a seller's market. You know, they can do what they want. The people that have players to give are going to be able to name the price. They really are, and it's scary.
Well, you think you go by division, and we got to go in a minute. But in contenders, I don't count Tampa or Toronto as contenders. So you have, we're talking for playoff spots, not for division. You got Baltimore, New York, and Boston.
Yep.
I would say, and then you have Cleveland, Minnesota, Kansas City. So that's six. Then you have Seattle and Houston. I wouldn't count out Texas yet. They're only five games back of the West, so let's just include them. So we're talking nine teams in the AL could be buyers.
Absolutely.
That's a lot. That's a lot of teams. And in the NL, I even think the Mets could be buyers. So that's three in the AL, NL East. I don't think Pittsburgh, even at 48 and 48, they're probably not buyers. So that's Milwaukee and St. Louis. And I don't know. I don't know that San Diego can be a buyer.
Yeah,
I think
it's interesting.
San Francisco.
The National League is very interesting because you always have these teams that like that won't that traditionally aren't going to spend. The Pittsburgh, the Cincinnati, Arizona, San Diego. We know likes to spend, but they also like to spend stupid, right?
Right.
So
and they're in some trouble
for a team like the ones that intrigue me in the National League. We know the Mets will do what they have to do because they don't care about money, right? It's just a matter of can they pull the trigger and do they have the people to give. The ones that intrigue me are the Pittsburghs and the Cincinnati, because Pittsburgh, you have a team that's young. You have talent on both these teams. You have young stars. You have the Paul Skeens. You have the Ellie De La Cruzes. You have the O'Neill Cruzes. You have the Brian, the Roberts. So what will those teams do? Are they going to be able to get a player that they need, a pitcher or a bat or something, you know? And because you don't talk, no one talks about those teams. Nobody talks about Pittsburgh and Cincinnati making a move because they don't think they will. And I would think that these teams have players to give to get the impact player they need. So will they do it, and will they disrupt the market? Because someone like them could throw a wrench big time in the market and go.
So if you include Pittsburgh and Cincy, I mean, you're talking upwards of 18, 19 teams as buyers.
Yep.
And that, first of all, that's good for baseball, and that makes for a fun deadline. You know, I don't have to repeat my whole Red Sox thing, because if they don't buy something, I'm just going to lose it, because they're in a position right now. It's not like they're competing. Like, they're not on the outside looking in. They're on the inside looking out. Now, it's a thin margin, and it could change in a matter of 3 days.
Yep.
But they're in the playoffs.
Playoffs!
And they're only... I know, but it's just I have this sinking feeling they're not going to do anything.
I do too.
And I wouldn't give up Marcelo Mayer. You know, I wouldn't give up, you know, someone like that.
But that's the big question. That is the big question, right? Are you willing to get rid of Marcelo Mayer? Are you willing to get rid of Spencer Jones for the Yankees? Like, that's the thing. Like, who are you willing to give up for that slice of the pie? And you've said it a million times, Brian. This is a win now sport. I don't care what team you are. If you have the team, you have to go for it, because next year you don't know what's going to happen. Gunnar Henderson could fall off his bike next year.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So if you have the shot,
go back to
go
the Washington Nationals. Yeah, and the way they protected what's-his-face early in his career. They that 1 year they shut him down, and I'm not against it. You know, his livelihood's at stake, but you know what? They could have probably won the World Series.
They probably could have had two World Series in 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's it. So it's going to be interesting. I think that the dog days, I mean, the next 2 weeks are going to be fantastic, because I do really think that I can see a president of baseball operations and a manager saying, listen, if you don't come out of the gates here and, you know, go, you know, I don't know, 10-4 or 8-3, then we're not buying.
Right.
You know, I mean, I feel like some teams feel like what happens in the next week and a half to 2 weeks is hugely important. And it's because it'll determine whether they do buy or sell.
And just think that the Yankees and Red Sox, 3 games after the All-Star break, could be facing each other in a dead tie, basically.
That's
crazy.
I don't think it's going to happen.
No, but it might not, but it could be going in.
Even if it's close, it's still going to be good.
It's going to be a huge three-game series coming out after the break if they're that close. Even if the Yankees with a four-game lead, it's a huge series. Even with a four-game lead over the Sox, it's a huge series. So,
and who would have thunk that that series would have been relevant?
There isn't one pundit or so-called expert that had the Red Sox doing what they're doing right now. And no. If anybody says they are, you're a liar. You're a liar.
Yeah. And the thing is that say they do make the playoffs and things are all feel good, and then Cora walks.
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting too, because people still say he's going to walk. So, John, great stuff as always. Appreciate it, and appreciate everyone listening here to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.